This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2016, held at Faith Builders on August 1 through 5.
Good morning. It's good to be with you. Good to be in the presence of a multitude of teachers. This is a wonderful sight. I have always enjoyed the teachers' weeks that I've been privileged to attend, getting to learn from the few who have been in it for decades. But equally so, I've enjoyed seeing new people each time that have, by God's grace, they're going to attempt to teach their first year. I've already met some of you, and I have a certain amount of compassion for that, for you, because I remember staring that incredible mountain of inexperience in the face. I hope that I can be an encouragement to you this week. 12 years has come and went very quickly, and I wonder if I've learned anything. Hopefully I have. Yes, I've taught for 12 years in Hewitt's Mennonite School in Hagerstown, Maryland, and I'm glad to be here with my wife, Carolyn, and 6 children. I belong to a unique breed of teachers. I didn't start teaching until after I was married. And so my wife and I are very acquainted with this very, very straight-up steep learning curve. And my children, too. My preparation, formal preparation for teaching was very unique. I didn't get to come to Faith Builders to prepare. I was in our family business for 13 years, driving a truck mostly, and the Lord decided that would be the right preparation. So then he took me out of that and into teaching. I've been very thankful for the experience. My favorite challenge as a teacher has been taking different subjects that maybe even the ones that the students think are boring and they don't see any point in it, and trying to make it interesting, trying to make it relevant to their lives, finding value and purpose in it. And I have never really gotten over that challenge. I find it fascinating. Enjoyed teaching many different subjects. The downside to that, then, is when Jonas Souter calls you and says, "Now it's time for you to share at Teachers Week. What are you an authority on?" And I've been enjoying teaching all these different things. I forgot to become an authority on something. And so you all that are teaching, you keep that in mind. Sometime he's going to call you and ask, "What are you an authority on?" or something like that. Anyway, the things that I share this week, I definitely enjoy talking about. They have challenged me much. David is my favorite Bible character. His life has challenged me often. Sometimes there are tough things that we go through, and I can always count on going back and opening up the story of David, and I know that I'm going to find a man who was put in a worse scenario than I ever was. And if he responded like that, well then, I guess I should be able to too. Because he was an Old Testament man, and I'm a New Testament man. We already sang about Christ being in us. Now, I'm supposed to, for some reason, have something up there. And it's not. What? So, it's out of my department. There is a verse that I have turned to more than any other verse in my 12 years of teaching. And it is the verse that's at the top of your main session notes. For each session, I just picked out a verse from the psalm to discuss and look at for a little. And this verse has inspired me often. Psalm 17, verse 15. As for me, I will behold thy face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awake with thy likeness. Now, that was a verse said by an Old Testament man. It seems like this should be a New Testament verse. I can imagine Paul saying that. He said things like that. Paul in the first chapter of Colossians has an interesting verse there. He says that Jesus Christ is the image of the invisible God. So what that means is that if you want to know something about God, he is behind those clouds up there, and I can't see him. If you want to see him, you will have to see him through Jesus Christ. And you keep reading in that first passage of Colossians, and you'll finally get to what Paul calls as the mystery of the gospel. Anyone know that phrase that he uses to describe the mystery of the gospel? What is it? Oh, it's been too long. You read Colossians 1. It is Christ in you, the hope of glory. So now what that means is that the world looking on, if they want to see the invisible God, they will have to look at you and see Christ in you, who is then the image of the invisible God. And it intrigues me that an Old Testament man came that close to comprehending the mystery of the gospel. It was important for David to perceive that because God was going to put David's life on display. You think that bothered David? I don't think he realized to what extent God was going to put his life on display. But David's life was really put on display. It almost seems like God set up extra tough scenarios because so many people are going to be watching this man. David, how are you going to respond? And sometimes David responded correctly, and we are amazed at it. Sometimes he responded in a way that was not so good. And those are some of the things we'll look at this week. The entire nation of Israel would have a chance to observe this man and see how he responded. Not only Israel, but it's amazing to me to think about that God had in mind that here's a man that's going to stand as an example for all succeeding generations. And you and I today are, David's life is still on display today. They tell me that there are 66 chapters of the Bible dedicated to the life of David, far more than any other Bible character. And there's plenty for us to learn and from the life of David. Now, it's important, I think, for us to study David because you and I have agreed to teach school somewhere this fall. And what that means is that we also are going to have our lives put on display. Do you like that thought? All your strengths, all your weaknesses, all your weird traits. It was amusing to me when Brother Howard was talking about, what will they say about me someday? He was a crazy teacher. He was an interesting teacher. Maybe a little of both. I don't know if that makes you nervous. I am pretty sure that it does not make God nervous. I think God is actually excited to be able to put your life on display. Because he knows that it's not really your life he's putting on display. It's the life of his son that he's putting on display. And you're just supposed to submit to that. So David never worried about what are people going to think. Well, maybe he did, I don't know. But it's not recorded. Instead, he holds this verse in front of us. This was his goal. I'm going to go out there and stand in front of those people. And as for me, I will behold thy face in righteousness. There's only one satisfaction I want to know when I awake with thy likeness. Now, my thoughts, I do not have in mind this week to give you an overview of the life of David. You know the story of David. So I want to take a little snapshots here and there from David's life that are instructive to us as teachers and think about practicalities to our day. I run the risk maybe of misrepresenting David, making him more than he really was. I don't know. I'll let you fill in the gaps. But this is not really supposed to be an overview of the life of David. So today, for a few minutes, we'll look at David's formative years, David as a shepherd. And this is the era of David's life that we know the least about. Maybe it would be nice to know more. I think we can assume some things because we have much has been written about the life of a shepherd. You've read about the life of a shepherd. David wrote about the life of a shepherd. Psalm 23, every time you read Psalm 23, you have a beautiful picture in your mind. Maybe you almost wish you could go there. Beautiful trees, a sunny sky, rippling brook, and quaint little sheep that are never doing anything wrong. And it's such a beautiful picture. And that is something we'd almost like to escape to. But David as a shepherd, those years formed David and made him what he was. And in his youth, he set a course that would guide him through his entire life. There are not many verses that you can turn to find details about what all David experienced as a shepherd. But there are a few. The first one that I have three verses out of David's life as a shepherd boy. And I think we can learn some things from those three verses. The first verse, if you have your Bible, since it's not up here on the board, is 1 Samuel 16, verse 11. And this verse introduces us to David. Now, the setting here is that Saul was a disappointment. And God told Samuel, go out to Bethlehem. There's a prominent family there. He has a lot of sons. And you choose a king from among his sons. God did not tell him which one. He did not name him. Samuel is going, and there's this unnamed boy that he's to find, this unnamed son. Interestingly, Samuel shows up. And the sons start walking by. There's a feast. There's a sacrifice. There had been preparation for it. They had been sanctified so they could take part in this. And the sons start walking by. And they get to the end of the line. And Samuel is introduced to a lot of sons, but no king material. And Samuel makes the famous question. Is this all your sons? And so Jesse then says, well, there remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he keepeth the sheep. Now here is the dad, and he still doesn't tell us this boy's name. He didn't bother to name him. I don't think they even bothered to sanctify David for the feast. Doesn't appear that way anyway. He was out. He was living so low on the social ladder that he didn't even qualify to come to this celebration, sacrifice, big event, whatever it was. He is busy. I don't know how willing David was to be there, but he is busy doing one of the lowest jobs that a Judean boy could do. A common, typical job that a Judean boy would do, and that was keep sheep. There we go. All right. Now, one more thing back there. Do I push the button or do you? I do. Okay. All right. So let's see where we are. Just want to make a few observations about this verse now. The first one was that David is living at the close to the bottom of the social ladder. He's not a slave, but he is doing the common work of a regular, ordinary Judean boy, young man. And the word keeping would tell us that he's doing a good job of it. He is keeping the sheep. It's important. Now, the second observation I want to make from that is that the atmosphere of a shepherd is lonely and monotonous. There is an occasional lion or bear to spice things up, but most days are just very the same as the day before. It is obscure. Now, can you imagine a young boy that is there and he knows he has talent and there's no audience? And it could be dangerous. And you know, it's interesting that God has prepared many servants of his in that kind of an environment. Maybe he prepared you in that kind of environment. Behind the scene, it was very quiet. And one day followed another, and you wondered if this is the way my entire life is going to be. I went through a stage like that. I told you I used to drive truck. I was not a trucker. I drove truck. There is a big difference. But I drove truck. And so you spend a lot of time just holding a wheel. And down the road you go. Now, the way I entertain myself is I turn the radio on. That was way back before these kind of problems. And we just had, you know, simple interiors and simple equipment. There were no phones, but you turned on the radio. There was no tape player or CD player or anything, and you listened to music to keep yourself entertained. But I had a problem. My church decided that we weren't going to use the radio, and I thought that was ridiculous. And then my ministry was not understanding how awful it is to drive hours down the road with nothing. But the Holy Spirit began to convict me that you stood up at your baptism and said you would support. I had this terrible dilemma. I was going to face hours with nothing but the hum of a Caterpillar engine. But I decided that I needed to surrender to that. And so I did. Not knowing how many opportunities would come in the next years to wrestle with God through issues, all alone. And I look back now and really thank God for that experience. And you know what? The amazing thing is I still love to go down the road in my truck all alone. I don't take any MP3 player. I don't take, it's just quiet. And I call it therapy now. At one time, it was severe boredom. So, you know, I don't know where you are. It'd be nice to hear your experiences. But if your life is really noisy, I want you to remember, you are getting ready to put your life on display. I hope you know something about getting alone with God. Now, of course, there's no guarantee that the monotonous shepherd environment will work to make a boy eligible to be king. There's no guarantee of that, really. Because, you know, there were a lot of shepherds in Judah, but only one of them became king. Why was that? That's instructive to me because the environment itself is not enough. You must respond correctly to it. And that's what David did. So what made David different than the other shepherd boys in Judea at that time? Let's look at another verse. Now we're going to go forward in the book of 1 Samuel. Wait a second, I said forward, backwards. 1 Samuel 13. 1 Samuel 13, verse 14, is the next verse I want to look at. And this is actually that God alluded through Samuel to King Saul that there's coming a man who is a man after my own heart, and he is going to be captain of Israel. I'll read the verse. The Lord has sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people. Now, I was raising the question that is there something different about David compared to all the other shepherd boys in Bethlehem at that time? And there was. It is this, that he was a man after God's own heart. I think that there are three things that we should notice from that little phrase, a man after God's own heart. And the first is this, that David wanted to see the heart of God. Did every shepherd boy want to? I don't know. I suppose maybe they would have given, a quick consent to that. Oh, yes, I want to see the heart of God. But David wanted to see the heart of God. Now, the second thing that I think we need to observe from looking at that phrase, a man after God's own heart, David would take it a step further. How many times in the Psalms do you read about David waiting? That is a key word through the Psalms that David wrote. Now, all the boys may come to see what God has to show. And you know, you might look at David and think, you know, God preferred him. God gave him less human nature maybe than other men. No, he had the same human nature that you and I have. There was one man who was given none of it. That was Jesus. But not David. But while the other shepherd boys would come, and I think God was fair in showing all people the same. Here it is. I will show this to you if you will wait before me and seek it out. Now, I had another verse up here that I was going to show, and it was supposed to be up there, and I don't have it in my notes, but it's the verse in Proverbs that said, "Is the glory of the Lord to conceal a matter, and it is the honor of kings to search it out." And why does God stand up there and keep himself concealed? Maybe it's similar to the way it was for Jesus in the New Testament when he gave parables. It's fascinating to think about how Jesus would face a multitude of people and speaking these intriguing stories that are old for you, but they were brand new in that moment. And everyone listened. Interesting story. But what did that mean? Well, most people left wondering, such a strange way of teaching. But a few stayed and waited and asked and searched until they found what Jesus was really getting at. And so David waited. Now, I know that's counter-American. That is not how we like to do. We don't like to wait. We like to hurry to this thing and hurry to that and go from one thing to another. We're discussing three things about a man after God's own heart. David wanted to see the heart of God. David waited around, patient enough to wait. Now, the life of a shepherd gave many opportunities for that. I don't think all shepherd boys took it, though. Probably other shepherd boys were thinking about, how can I get the best pasture land? Maybe jockeying with each other over the best pasture land. Or maybe they were sitting around just dreaming about the day when they would fight in Saul's army. Or maybe they were complaining about, stuck back here in obscurity and no way to use my talents and my gifts out on the stage. I don't know what they thought about. And then there was a strange boy, David, who would just lay down and stare at the stars. And he saw things through the stars that other boys didn't see. Most boys saw stars. Stars. Okay, back to business. David saw past the stars. And then when David saw what God saw, he would obey what God showed him. Now, I'm glad that we've got this machine working, because I did have some kind of a crude example that I wanted to use to illustrate this. It is crude, but I think it makes the point. I tried to make the point there that God gives truth to all men. He is fair to all men in the way he gives truth. He's also fair to all men in the way he conceals. Here's that verse that I was referring to. I don't know if I quite had it right. It is the glory of God to conceal a thing. It is the honor of kings to search out a matter. And he is fair to all men in the level that he does that to. But it's up to us to see it, want to see it, to wait before God until we do see it, and then obey him when he shows it to us. Now, for my crude example, we can imagine that maybe all the shepherd boys came and saw this. God showed them this. And they look at it and they say, this is four beetles walking up a pole. Maybe you've seen this before. This is four beetles walking up a pole. And so they say, how nice, four beetles walking up a pole. And they walk away and go back to talking about fighting in Saul's army. But David stays behind. And he says, Lord, it looks like four beetles on a pole. But is that the way you see it? Do you see four beetles on a pole? Or do you see something else? And it's not, as David stands there and looks at that, it's not that he really hears an audible voice, but all of a sudden, he sees it. Some of you are maybe seeing it. It just breaks open before him. And he's so amazed by it that he forgets about sheep and fighting in Saul's army. Because now he sees what God sees. He doesn't see four beetles, he sees one bear. And the boys come running back. And they say, David, you're still looking at the four beetles on the wall. No, those are not beetles. Those are bear's claws. And the boys say, you're calling those bear's claws. You must be strange. You must not be getting enough sleep or something. And you know, you're strange, crazy. How do you know that those are bear's claws? Well, God told me. Well, David, I think you better go home and check in with a shrink or something. God told you. Yes. And so although all the other people are saying, no, it's for Beatles. David obeys what God shows him. God showed him that it was one bear. And so he believes that, even though very few others do. And so he sees a bear climbing up a pole, while others see four beetles. Now, that was a crude illustration. But it brings out, I think, what David's experienced. And it captivated him so that he lost interest in pursuing what most natural men enjoy pursuing. Wait on the Lord. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. And I've always enjoyed this verse from Psalm 119. I have more understanding than all my teachers. I hope you don't have a student this year that can say that. Shame on you if that's true. I have more understanding than all my teachers, for thy testimonies are my meditation. Now, because David did those three things, he wanted to see what God saw, he waited until he saw it, and then he obeyed what God showed him. Because he was willing to do those three things, God rewarded him. By the way, someday, the bear's going to peek around the corner, and there'll be no more questions, right? Because David sought after God, God rewarded him. And this is the last verse I want to look at in connection with David the shepherd boy. And this verse comes from 1 Samuel 16, verse 13. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. Saul lost it. David never did. And we'll maybe look at some more of that this week. I don't know that I totally understand how the Spirit worked in a man in the Old Testament. But I do know that David was no longer behaved like a natural man. He now behaves like a spiritual man. And God rewarded him for it. God rewarded him in at least two ways. God rewarded David's search by giving him his spirit. There was a search, and as a result of that, God gave him his spirit. And also, God rewarded David's obedience by giving him wisdom that natural men do not have. And when I thought about this, I thought of the passage in 1 Corinthians 2. I've always enjoyed these verses. That a natural man cannot know. He will see beetles to his dying day because he's a natural man. It takes a spiritual man to be able to see and understand what God sees and understands. That's what those last verses of 1 Corinthians 2 are talking about. And it has always intrigued me as a teacher, especially because I'm a teacher I am not a teacher by right of any intellectual genius. And many of you are probably the same way. I was a C student in math in school. My dear mother spent countless evenings very frustrated with me. And when they asked me to teach school, she said, Linford, no, this will not work. And I decided I was going to ask six people if they thought I should teach. And she was the one holdout for a while. But she finally gave in and decided, I guess the grace of God can cover these things. I don't know. You'll have to ask my students how I do in math as far as teaching it. But the thing that has always been beautiful to me is, have you ever prayed for wisdom? You pray, Lord, give me wisdom. I am so in need of wisdom. The key is in the life of David. He wanted to see it. He waited until he saw it, and then he obeyed. And as a result of his obedience, something any of us can do, he got wisdom. The key to wisdom is, oh yes, go ahead and pray for wisdom, but is your life a life of obedience to everything that God has showed you? Now, I don't know if you read Oswald Chambers' My Utmost for His Highest for devotions, but just last week on Wednesday, you read something. It is one of my favorite little excerpts from that book. And I'll put it up here. You can read it. The golden rule for understanding spiritually is not intellect, but obedience. If a man wants scientific knowledge, intellectual curiosity is his guide. But if he wants insight into what Jesus Christ teaches, he can only get it by obedience. If things are dark to me, then I may be sure there is something I will not do. Intellectual darkness comes through ignorance. Spiritual darkness comes because of something I do not intend to obey. And that has smitten me many times as a teacher. That's kind of raw. Maybe you look at that and you think, we kind of need to balance that out. Well, I'm not going to balance it out. I'm just going to let you look at it and think about it. There have been times I've been tempted to chase the intellectual, academic thing to its conclusion. But it will let you down. David lived a very simple life as a shepherd boy. It was not complicated. For one thing, he didn't have computers. He wanted to see what God saw. And he was patient enough to wait, get the noise out of his life, get everything nice and quiet, and sit there until he saw it. And then, probably with the realization that I just saw something that people are going to think I'm probably strange for thinking this. Well, he was courageous enough to go out and obey that and live it in his life, even though people may have thought he was strange. While he was lying on his back, staring into the sky, somehow the clouds were rolled away. And David saw the glory of God, far more glorious to him than any earthly pursuit, any position in Saul's army, far more glorious than the best pasture land. And that changed his life forever. He became so enamored with the glory that he saw behind those clouds that he became more jealous for the God of Israel than all the men in Saul's army put together. Tomorrow, Lord willing, we'll take David out to Saul's army and see how he fared. I have one closing verse to look at as I sit down. As the heart panteth after the water brooks, so panteth my soul after thee, O God. Lord bless you all with a good day.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.